This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com. Happy Monday to everybody. I hope everybody had a great weekend. Got a short show today and tomorrow with the Mariners over there taking on the Toronto Blue Jays, trying to get back in the win column, win a series. Hopefully they'll achieve all of that. We'll get into all that discussion. So we're with you for an hour, and then we will turn you over to Mariners pregame coming up at 4 o'clock today. No guest today because, as Matt says on the sheet, we're only on for like 45 minutes, and I don't like reaching out to people.
I really don't. A lot of sports people, they scare me. You know, what if they say no? I'll feel so rejected.
Oh, yeah.
It's not the way to start.
You wouldn't give a crap.
Yeah, he's right. I just was lazy. Yeah.
I don't like reaching out to people. So we've got an hour of radio fury coming your way.
I'm sorry, Bob, to interrupt. You could have taken the reaching out part out of it and just say, I don't like people.
Well, yeah, but we already knew that. I thought I'd get more specific for it. I also didn't think we'd read this on air.
I thought it was a funny line, so it was worth mentioning. But Lefko is out watching one of his beloved 13 teams play tonight, the Purdue Boilermakers. So he's in bliss out there in Phoenix, in his nerd heaven.
How about that picture he sent? He's staying in like a mansion. Basically,
yeah, huge. Like 16 people are staying in this place that they rented, and he showed me an aerial shot of it, and it looks like a resort that they're staying in. I mean, it is, the outside anyway is impressive. I don't know what it looks like inside, but it is a legit mansion that they're staying in.
What was more shocking, that or the fact that Lefko has 15 friends?
He doesn't know all of them. He made that very clear. He only knows a couple of the people there, so I don't know if they can all,
that makes sense.
They're new friends. They'll be new friends by the end of the weekend. But, yeah, he was telling me how he only knows a couple of the guys there, and, you know, hopefully my friend is there to let me in when I get there, because, you know, he was going through his Lefkoisms before he left. But, yeah, he's out there watching his Purdue Boilermakers, who will take on UConn tonight for the national title game. Meanwhile, Mariners, they're looking to get it back in the win column. It was a rough trip. It was a rough trip out there in Milwaukee. They're 4-6 to start the season, which you look at the record and go, all right, it's 10 games. You still have 100 and what, Dave? 100.
Well, what, you said 10 have been played?
Yeah, that's right.
152?
There you go. Still 152.
Thanks for putting me under pressure there.
You got panicked there for
that
a minute.
That was an easy one. You lobbed that one up.
Are you concerned? Are you panicked? I did my baseball video, the Bob's Baseball Breakdown. You can watch that on our YouTube channel or at seattlesports.com. But that was one of the questions. What's your level of panic? And this is before the Milwaukee series. I'm like, well, none. You can't call it panic until you get a feel for this team. They get into the season a bit. When you got 152 games to go, you're not doing anybody a favor by panicking.
No, that's true. And you know, like you look at is it 188 that Julio is batting right now? Do we think that that's going to continue?
Yeah, he's a bust.
Yeah, I don't think so. JP, last time we talked about JP when we were at the ballpark last week, you know, he was at 083, which I just remember that number because that was Cal for a while, his rookie year. And then all of a sudden he started coming up with big hits. And, you know, so right now he's at 128. I don't think that that's going to continue.
I don't think any of these are going to continue.
No.
I mean, it's early to where somebody has a good game and all of a sudden their average goes up 150 points. Or somebody has a bad game and it drops by 75 points. I mean, we're in that time of year where the numbers are fluctuating wildly. Ultimately, everybody will sort of, you know, find their spot, find their rhythm, if you will. Yeah. And I mean, because you look at it, you'd bring up Julio. Julio's hitting 205. Cal Raleigh is hitting 200. Right. Polanco 184. Urias 176. Canzone 174. I mean, Crawford is not going to hit 128 for the season.
Yeah.
Now, Zavala, he might hit zero. But the rest of the guys, you know, it's going to change. They put up 14 runs in three games. Problem was your pitching took a nosedive in the last game and your closer had a meltdown. You know, so the offense wasn't really the problem in this series. I mean, yeah, you could have used more timely moments, certainly, but You put up 5 runs in each of the first 2 games. You put up 4 in the second. I know the Canzone home run was kind of garbage time because it was 12-2.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, you put up 14 runs in 3 games. Usually, you like your chances to win a series with that.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about them scoring 4 runs, which they did. That's a pretty safe place for them based on the defense and the pitching that they have. You know, I got to say, one of the things that stood out to me yesterday was Emerson Hancock and his... I've talked about this before. Remember Trey Brown? He's a corner for the Seahawks, obviously. His post-game interview did more than anything he did on the field, just because everything that he talked about was perfect. That's exactly how you should be when you're a young player or a rookie. And I heard the same things from Emerson Hancock. You know, he's just talking about, hey, look, I should have found a way to get off the mound. I wasn't able to execute. You know, I wanted to be out there as long as possible so I could take the load off the bullpen. Mm-hmm. I mean, I mean, we're going off of very small sample size here, but it just, that kind of demonstrates the maturity of this team, and that I don't think that they're going to get up or too high or too low. And, you know, you look at the numbers, as you mentioned, like Cal 200, Polanco, it can't continue. I think these guys are too good of ball players. So we'll see what happens tonight. This was kind of interesting. I got this from afterwards. Bill Kruger was talking about Castillo, and he has not allowed, I think it's a left-handed hit yet. The righties has not allowed a right-handed hit and the entire season. And this is a lineup with Bichette and Guerrero that come up that are right-handers. So maybe that's a good omen for tonight. But I'm looking forward to that and seeing them get back on the winning side. And I feel like if they do, then we'll be like, okay, hey, we feel pretty good. It's just so early that you can't overreact to everyone. But we're going to do that. We're going to react.
You have to just react. It's all we have are these 10 games to react to. And what we've seen in these 10 games largely has not been positive. It's not been a great product on the field for the very few exceptions. You know, the defense has been problematic throughout these 10 games. Defense has been way too much of a conversation piece for my taste, way too much. You know, just routine plays, just moments you're like, what is happening out there? That's just not what you expect when you've got Perry Hill in charge of things with the infield. And moments that have happened, you're like, all right, are these guys just finding their rhythm? They talked about the turnover. We talked about it last week that there are only 8 players left from last year's opening day roster on this roster. So it's just a massive amount of turnover. Is it going to just take a while for everybody to find their rhythm? I don't, you know, it's a different sport than football where you're not really like an O-line. You're working in concert with each other.
Yeah.
That element doesn't really exist in baseball to that extent. Yeah. You got to be on the same page when you're turning a double play and
right.
You guys are communicating, but yeah, it's been sloppy. They haven't played a lot of clean baseball. We'll get into the pitching coming up, but offensively, you know, if I'm going to pull a positive from the weekend, it is, all right, you put up 14 runs in those 3 games, you know, because you had a game you won 1-0, you know, where the offense looked abysmal. At least things were starting to happen. You're starting to see guys find it a little bit, and I would imagine that's how it's going to continue. But Scott Servais just talking about the inconsistency and, again, comparing it to a football season.
Yeah, just inconsistent. I think from a bat to a bat, we've seen some guys, a couple guys. I think Ty swung the bat pretty good early on. Haney's had pretty consistent, you know, quality at bats. But up and down the lineup, and it's one thing we felt really good about this team, we put it together. I thought the lineup was going to be a lot deeper than it had been here in a while. And it looks great on paper. You got to go out and do it, you know. And our guys will get it done. I really believe it. It is such a long season, gang. I think in an NFL season, we're not even to halftime in the first game yet. Put that in perspective. So everybody wants to jump off, and it's halftime of the first game of an NFL season is where we're at. So we have a lot of baseball yet ahead of us.
That was before this series, right, when we talked to him?
I would imagine the message is still the same.
I was going to say, it probably hasn't changed much. Scott, where are we now? Somebody was like doing the math, and, well, technically it's the third quarter. It's even more dire than we thought.
Well, yeah.
But maybe we're halfway through the fourth quarter now of the first game. But, yeah, I think for Scott, he does a really good job with that. And I talked earlier about the maturity of, you know, these guys are just grown-ups. You see, you know, like I said, Emerson Hancock, he's this young face. And out of his mouth is coming just gems. I mean, I think that all comes from Scott Service, just trying to keep these guys and motivate them, but don't get, you know, don't fly off the handle and get too emotional about it. And that's how he was about it. I think this is by far the hardest part of Scott's job, of coming after a game like this and trying to explain. Like, it's kind of reminds me of what Jerry DePoto said, like, you know, when they went and got Winker and Frazier. It's like, yeah, we went and got him and it didn't work out. It just didn't work out. So that's kind of what happened over the weekend. So, you know, got the one win. I liked Urias hitting a bomb. How about that?
Yeah, Polanco hit a bomb. You had moments within this series that you could point to, but it's, you know, you got to win a series. They played three series so far. You lost all three. I'd say you're lucky to be at 4-6 based on the way things have gone defensively, based on how things started offensively. But you could argue, well, maybe they should have another win if Munoz doesn't have an epic meltdown where he'd never walk more than two hitters in an inning in his career, and he walks four, you know, where it was just, what is happening here? He just couldn't find it. I don't know if I give Scott credit at the time when they brought him out the very next night. I'm like, oh, no. Mm. Oh, boy. Here we go. Buckle up. Like, I'm like, yeah, this could be a good choice, but could also be really bad. It worked out, but... Yeah, he, you know, there's been some moments where you're just like, I don't know what I'm watching here with this team. But again, 4-6, my biggest fear is not so much, all right, they're two games under 500, it's 10 games, big deal. What I don't want is them to get too far behind the teams in front of them, and which at this point of the season is not even really a conversation. But if this were to continue and the Rangers get hot, I mean, now they're trailing the Angels. Angels were a team that had a team meeting after the first two games. They look like, man, this team's already on in the midst of a face plant. Let's come together and have a meeting. That's how bad it was with the Angels. And now they're sitting ahead of the Mariners by a game and a half. So what I don't want is them getting too far back to where they're just spending the season trying to dig out of the hole they dug for themselves. We talked about how important it was for this team to get off to a good start. And that's still very, very possible. It's you know, we keep leaning on 10 games, but you got to start putting it together. And we talked to John Morosi, and he talked about the same thing. They got to put together a good April because, you know, you've got the Astros who are probably going to find it. They got off to a terrible start, but you feel like they're going to find it. And the Rangers are probably just going to keep getting better.
Right. No, and that's a really key thing here for me, Ryan, is that both Texas and Houston, that their rotations are going to get better as the year goes along. And Houston, they had a dreadful first series against the Yankees, of course, but then they were able to come back and win the series against Toronto, including the no-hitter. They're going to be a lot better as time moves on, and their pitching will get more consistent. I think the Rangers as well, for them to start 4-2 is actually pretty good considering where their rotation is and the number of personnel they have on their IL at the moment. I think the Mariners, as they are now, this is the team they've got for the foreseeable future. Certainly, they obviously expect that they'll be able to get some health back with Wu, but I think in general, this is a team that is likely the group that they're going to have for the next several weeks at the very least.
How about the Houston Astro fans? I mean, they started off 2-5. Of course, they get swept at home, but you know they're 3-7 right now. That's a really good baseball team.
I think when you've won as much as that team has, the fan base is probably much more relaxed. Going, they're going to be fine.
Yeah,
they're going to be fine. And you know what? If they're not, we've got a couple titles under our belt, even though we cheated. We're a bunch of cheaters and we're awful fans. But I think they get it.
You think they say that?
Yeah, probably not. They feel justified. All right, quit picking on us. But no, I think when you've had as much success as they've had, all right, if it is a down season, yeah, you're not going to be pleased by any stretch, but you're not going to be, you know, running your head into a wall going, I can't believe this happened. What in the hell is going on with this franchise? I wouldn't imagine that's a prevailing feeling out there, that they're going to be much more calm about either a down season or at least a slow start, certainly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, they've been through this experience, and they're probably going back to times that they made it to the playoffs where they started out like this, and so they have that kind of track record. But, yeah, so hopefully you get it going tonight. And with the pitching, I sort of stumbled through this, but, you know, that's exactly what Bill Krueger said about Castillo, that he has not given up a hit to a right-handed hitter. But left-handed hitters are hitting 485. But right now, you know, you look at their big, you know, Bichette, Guerrero, Springer, they're all righties. They're all batting under 200. Mm-hmm. So hopefully Luis is able to get it going and be the guy that, you know, we haven't really seen from him, that dominance of being the ace. And I feel like he's too good of a pitcher. And I know his teammates believe in him, and I'm sure that he believes in himself that, you know, he's going to be able to have hopefully have a good night, especially against those righties.
Yeah, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. You guys, how are you feeling? Is there panic out there? I'm not panicked. I mean, they, and by the way, somebody pointing out, and they're accurate, they did not lose the series. They split the series with the Red Sox. That's true.
Yeah.
So, my bad. Good call, 206.
But, oh, wow. You're going to give credit to one of our texters?
If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. That's okay, that's how it goes.
You wear it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, the good
even
call, 206.
So painful to say that a texter is right.
It doesn't happen often, but yeah, this person, she was right. So, yeah, we'll see if they can win a series, which would be really, really, I think that goes a long way into making people feel better. You go, yeah. You take 2 of 3 from the Blue Jays, you can diminish it. You can say, well, they're not hitting well. You just pointed out these guys, you know, in their lineup aren't doing squat offensively either. So they're trying to find it. It doesn't matter. Win the series. Go out there and win that series.
Yeah. And you know, that place is going to be packed probably, right? I mean, they probably have the best fans anywhere. I know it does, especially when it comes time for All-Star voting. 206, serious question, calls us losers. Hey, losers, when do you eat crow for your stupid optimism? let's see. I would say end of May.
Eat crow for your stupid optimism.
Meaning, yeah, we're just
is this their attempt at a mean text or?
I just think it's somebody that's you know, kind of hit the panic button. And again, it's just, I think it's hard for fans. I mean, you overreact. You're going to overreact. They could go on a ridiculous run right now at any time. I mean, I think they have the players to do that, but, you know, they still got to go out there and get it done. And that's why I, you know, again, bring up the Frazier and Winker thing, is that, like, that's my biggest fear, is that you get guys that come in here off of a really good season and it just doesn't work for whatever reason. We see that in free agency all the time in the NFL, or a player come back, wow, he was really good, and just doesn't work out. So that's my biggest fear. But I think this group is gonna end up working out.
Yeah, we'll see. Man, there's a chance they don't. I mean, you can feel, this guy can feel justified in them being bad through 10 games. That's fine. Maybe they're not even a Mariner. Maybe it's an Astros fan we upset. I don't know.
Well, it's a 206. He says, I'm not mean. It's just realism. Well, you did call us losers.
Yeah, trust me, this donkey will be absent if they go on a big winning streak and all of a sudden they're kicking everybody's tail. This person will be hiding under a table. So whatever. I mean, you know, if you want to live in that world, go help yourself, man. Like I said, it's 152 games. It's going to be a long season. If this is if you're taking great delight in your home team's failures, I don't know what that says about you, but enjoy it, I guess. Have fun.
I think this is realistic and fair. 360. Won't lie to you, I still have PTSD from last year and years before.
Yeah, that's okay. 100% fair.
Yeah.
100% fair. I don't blame it. I said that before, that anybody who's mad or frustrated or, you know, I thought we were going to be better, or I thought, you know, this is not what I signed up for. I don't blame any fan for being frustrated with what they've seen through 10 games. It hasn't been impressive. Nobody's trying to sell you that it is. All we're trying to sell you is, just let's see what happens here. It's, you got 152 to go. It takes a while, at least for me, to really come to a black and white, this is how I feel this team is. They're good at this. They're not good at that. This is where they excel. This is where they struggle. Let's see, once they've, you know, gotten some time under their belt and they develop any kind of rhythm, all right, maybe they will be. Maybe they'll be bad. I don't know. I feel like this is a better team, certainly, going into the season than what they put on the field last year. Yep. I hated their offseason last year. I just did not. I liked Teoscar. That didn't work out. I was happy with the move, though. But when they went with Wong and LaStella and Pollock and Hummel, I'm like, what are you doing? What is that? This offseason is better. Doesn't mean it's you know, cream of the crop. They certainly weren't shopping off the top shelf. But considering the financial constraints, they did better than they did last offseason. And I think that'll that'll prove itself to be true. But we'll all find out together. And anybody who wants to, you know, call it, throw in the towel right now and say, told ya, you're all losers. Well, help yourself. Enjoy the rest of your day. You sound fun. All right, let's take two.
Former Texas defensive lineman Devondre Sweat, the 2023 Big 12 Player of the Year, was arrested for DWI over the weekend. The 22-year-old has declared for the NFL draft and was ranked as the number three defensive tackle prospect by Mel Kiper Jr.
Yeah, these, unfortunately, are not unique moments, Dave, and I said it in the note that I realize we're talking about a young man here. He's 22. He's not a kid, but he's not, you know, he's very young in life. You make bad choices. I certainly did at 22. I didn't have this much on the line at 22. Your future is right there. You're projected as, you know, by some, as he said here, by Mel, the number three defensive tackle. You're in line for a big payday where your character is being assessed. You're being picked apart by GMs and scouts and coaches, and here's what this kid does well and what he doesn't do well. And this now becomes a concern. This becomes a red flag for some organizations, and maybe you lose some money. Maybe you drop down in the draft from a position you otherwise would have been drafted because you couldn't hold it together for just a couple of more weeks until the draft happened. I just marvel at some of the decisions that are made.
Yeah, it's one of those character things that they're definitely looking at. And we talked to the security guys down there, and these are the kinds of things they're looking for, right? This, by the way, is the guy that had to go and get weighed, I think, by the truck scales.
Is that him?
6'4", 366. So, yeah, and they have some really talented, they're two inside guys. I can't remember the other guy, but Devondre Sweat was a big part of why people were arguing that Texas was going to beat Washington in that playoff game.
The South Carolina Gamecocks have won the NCAA Women's Basketball Championship, beating the Iowa Hawkeyes 87-75. They are the 10th team in Division I history to complete an undefeated season.
That's pretty impressive, the number of games that they won, you know. And then I was wildly entertained by this game last night.
Yeah, that was a compelling game.
It was really good. And look, I'll say this about, I like watching the women's basketball for a different reason. I mean, look, they're not as fast. They can't jump as high as the men do, but they freaking execute. And some of the passes, some of the assists, I mean, you saw, Clark, she ends up scoring, 30 points, and she had led the team in assists. And, you know, they just play really good. And I've always said this, I coached shot put at my kids' high school, and the girls listen when you coach them. And, you know, that's the thing I've noticed. It's two different games. But I think both are pretty awesome. And, I was on the edge of my seat watching that. That was an impressive win. And start looking up Dawn Staley and what she means to women's basketball. She's like the GOAT.
Yeah. She was a hell of a player, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a very, very entertaining game. And the ratings have been crazy. Crazy. So I'm curious to see what this game did. I haven't seen any numbers yet, but maybe they're out there. We'll take a look. But, yeah, the previous Iowa game, it broke like it was the most watched women's game ever. It was like 14 point whatever million people. It's good to see. Good to see. Take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberknifeProstate. Well, we've been talking about this Mariners starting rotation all off season. And so far, they haven't quite lived up to the hype. We'll get into that conversation coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Mariners getting set to take on the Toronto Blue Jays. Hopefully the beginning of a series win. Let's all hope together that that's going to happen. And I think in order for that to happen, Dave, we're going to need to see the offense do what it did for the most part in Milwaukee. They put up 5 runs each in the first 2 games. They put up 4 in the third one, even though they gave up 12. But so the offense felt like, okay, starting to find it. What they need is this rotation we've all been raving about and talking about to find their rhythm, because each pitcher in this rotation so far, and I'll give Hancock a break. He was supposed to start the year in AAA. He's your sixth guy, if you will. But even he falls into this pattern. Each pitcher, with the exception of Luis Castillo, has had a really good start and a really bad one.
Mm-hmm.
Luis has just had 2 kind of subpar. Well, they weren't disasters, but they weren't great either. They weren't your ace. He's your ace. Luis Castillo is your ace. He's the guy that you go to the playoffs and you got your lineup, your rotation set. He's pitching game one. He has not pitched like that guy. So he's been, I guess, consistent in that way, whereas Kirby had a gem in his first game and a disaster in his second game. And then you had Logan, who had a great first game, and his second game wasn't awesome. It wasn't a disaster, but it certainly wasn't awesome. Same Miller. First game, not great. His last game, 78 pitches of just beautiful ball. In fact, everybody's going, why is he pulling him out of the game? 78 pitches. And Scott was more about, hey, man, this is an early season. These are young guys. We need to, you know, pace them for the season. And okay. So everybody has taken that turn. Hancock, that first game, he comes in. He wasn't dominant, but he gave you exactly what you needed and a little bit more. Gave you 5 1/3, gave up 3 runs. He kept your team in the game, gave you a chance to win.
Well, not only that, maybe one of the best starts ever for a rookie pitcher. Well, I mean, he had a couple of starts last year. For a young pitcher.
Yeah, he had 3 starts last year.
Right. So, man, I thought it was like, remember, it was like a minute and 45 seconds. It just went 1, 2, 3. So, yeah, you've seen both of, you know, good and bad from
everybody. Yeah, which they got. We can talk about the offense, which is certainly can be a concern, but this rotation has to be find their rhythm of consistency. And it doesn't mean they're going to go out there and just lock everybody down every single start. Everybody's going to throw out a dud. But, you know, so far it's been kind of interesting how they've all followed that pattern of one good game, one bad game. One good game, and Castillo is the outlier where he's just had two games where he didn't pitch like the ace. And he didn't. There were some moments of where defense impacted him, and, you know, it hasn't helped. But that's any pitcher out there. You've got to pick your guys up. Somebody falls short behind you, that can't be the reason you went out and fell on your face. You got to go out there and figure out a way to overcome whatever mistakes happen behind you.
Well, and it also directly affects your bullpen, right? I mean, that's what Emerson Hancock was talking about yesterday, that, you know, that, hey, I wanted to go long, so we saved the bullpen. So, and that's part of why they've been good, because of the starting rotation. So hopefully they'll get it going. And again, tonight you got Castillo, and yeah, I texted Bill Kruger. I said, hey, you know, asked him the stat, and I said, I'll steal this from you, but I will credit you, Bill.
Our so guy, it's not Bill really Kruger. A theft.
No, not at all.
You're giving him proper attribution here.
Yeah, but Bill saying that right-handed hitters against Castillo have not gotten a hit, and so left-handed hitters are 485, and Toronto has three, you know, of their big bats are scuffling, and they're righties, and they're all batting under 200, so maybe that's maybe we get that, but like you said, we've kind of got good and bad. And the most shocking by far, especially based on what Kirby did in the opener, was that performance last week where we went down against Cleveland.
Yeah, he was dreadful.
The ballpark. Yeah. It was like he was totally lost.
It was bad. It was in I feel like he, and a lot of pitchers do, I feel like Luis to a certain extent, they get impacted by the plays that don't happen behind him. If somebody boots a ball behind him, you often see the body language. You'll see it with Kirby. He's a little demonstrative at times where it's like that look like, come on. Like, you got to make that play. Listen, man, everybody's got to pick each other up. If you're not pitching well, then that offense has got to pick you up. And if that defense is not playing well, you got to pick them up, man. It's just how it goes. You're going to take turns not coming through. That's baseball. So you can't let those moments affect the rest of your game.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It certainly doesn't help. Doesn't help any pitcher out there when the defense isn't making the routine play, but you got to be able to overcome it.
Well, and the other thing is there's got to be a number of times where they bailed you out.
Yeah.
Right. With an amazing play. Do you think Castillo does a little bit of that or?
Yeah, he's not demonstrative like Kirby. He doesn't show it like that, but it feels like there are times when things don't go well behind him that
it
the start kind of seems to follow that, like it snowballs a bit. So yeah, and then it's amazing. We've seen 10 games. We've seen Josh Rojas pitch twice. We've seen a position player out there pitching twice already. And, you know, look, he had a great attitude about it when we interviewed him after his first appearance. He had his second appearance yesterday and threw a 40-mile-an-hour pitch up there that forced a pop-up, but it's entertaining to see him out there. You just don't want to see that very often because that means things are not going well.
The 2-1 swing, and it's popped up. Third base side foul territory over is Zavala. Calling for it is Josh Rojas, the pitcher. And Rojas makes the catch. Rojas, the third baseman, says, you know, I've been over here plenty of times catching pop-ups in foul territory. I've got it. He calls off Zavala, and it's Josh Rojas, the pitcher. And there's one away for the Guardians here in the top of the ninth inning.
Yeah, you're allowed to call him off if you're a third baseman up on the mound, right?
Yeah, Aaron made a good point on the broadcast yesterday when he came up to the plate after being on the hill, and they introduced him, now batting, pitcher, Josh Rojas. How weird it was to hear that over the PA there in Milwaukee, him being labeled the pitcher. But that's what he's done.
Well, and he told us that he threw some curveballs. I don't think anybody noticed it, but
he threw a 40-mile-an-hour pitch.
Yeah.
It had a ton of arc to it, and it forced a pop-up. Yeah. Yeah, could all do 40.
Yeah.
I've got faith in that. It forced a pop-up. Now, he did give up a home run, which I thought, you know, okay. Do you feel good about that if you're the catcher in a blowout game and you crush one off of a third baseman? It should count as 1.5.
Yeah, I agree.
He had two home runs in the game, but that one doesn't have – that should have an asterisk next to it.
It's just like some of the bombs that Cal hits. I feel like they should be worth two.
Yeah, that's how I felt with Zunino.
Yeah, Zunino.
He was all or nothing.
Like, just save some of that. Save, you know, 50 feet or whatever. But, yeah, it was kind of funny watching him. But meanwhile, he's having a good year, man, at the plate. He's batting .412. It's early, 3 RBIs, but a double. I mean – He's been good. And we talked to him the other day last week. And, you know, we started off with like, hey, we interviewed you last year. And we were like afterwards, hey, we need you to get really good because you're a great interview. And he was. He was good again. And he's gotten good. So pretty excited. I thought Urias, he's been one that I'm least excited about. But him hitting the home run there to give them a little bit of padding.
Yeah, I think he went second deck with that one. Was that him or Polanco? I can't remember. They both hit their first home run.
I was surprised.
From the team. And I can't remember which guy went in the second deck. But certainly good to see. Without question, it's, you know, we're all anxious to see the offense get going. But, you know, I think if they're going to get this thing turned around, it's got to start with their strength. And their strength is their pitching. And it's got to start with their ace, who's going tonight, Luis Castillo. He's got to pitch like an ace tonight.
Exactly. And especially, you know, with the stats that Bill Krueger was talking about, that their guys are scuffling. They're all hitting under 200. They're right-handers, Guerrero, and, you know, they're big sluggers. And it should start off like, okay, let's go. No home runs, please. Luis does tend to give those up and start to be more solid. That's been the one, you know, going into the season, it's like, man, we know we're going to get good performances by these guys no matter what. And particularly, like I said, I hate to keep putting it on Kirby. You're right about the body language, too. You know, that when there was that collision, mm-hmm. you know, it didn't seem like, I don't know, you know, and whatever. I don't care about his personality because I think there was something last year. He's kind of cocky, and I like that about him. I like it. And I don't know if that's going to fly in the clubhouse or not, but I, you know, usually there's room for different kinds of personalities.
Yeah. But, as long as you're doing your part, man.
Yeah.
You better pick up your end. He seems to be liked in there. He does have a different vibe about him. There's an edge.
Yeah.
If you will. That's, like you said, that's fine. As long as your teammates like you and you're doing your thing, have that edge.
Yeah.
Don't care.
No, I play with a guy like that, Shannon Sharp. You know, and you see Shannon Sharp now.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about, I mean, that's about pretty much how he ran his mouth. And
it's
I
exhausting.
Loved him. He was just an awesome teammate, and everybody loved him, but that was just something about him, and he was going to do it at practice, whatever, but that's just who he is.
All right, coming up, perfect way to start the week. What's bugging Bob, Dave, Matt? Brady's back there. Is Taylor still back? We'll find out what everybody's bothered by. That's all coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
What's bugging Bob?
It could be traffic.
Hey.
It might be Angels fans.
I hate you. I don't even know you.
And it's definitely Stephen A. Smith.
I got a lot of problems with you people.
It's time to find out what's bugging Bob.
It is time for What's Bugging Bob, What's Bugging Us, which is presented by Issaquah Pest Control. Again, a reminder, coming up at 3 o'clock, we'll turn you over to the Mariners pregame show as they get set to take on the Blue Jays in game one of that series. But as has been the tradition, we start with our guy, Matt Nelson. What do you got, Matt?
Netflix is bugging me.
Why?
They are removing the extended edition of Quentin Tarantino's Hateful Eight. which is one of my favorite Tarantino movies.
I was just going to say that is such a wildly underrated movie.
It is.
I love that movie.
Thank you. People always say that it's one of Tarantino's worst. I completely disagree. And I think it is one that specifically benefits from the extended edition.
I don't think I've seen that.
Well, Bob, you've got, I think, 10 days left before you can. Like, they're just removing it. And the problem is the theatrical edition of Hateful Eight, that's out on Blu-ray and DVD. You can get it anywhere. But I don't think the extended edition is. I think it's only on Netflix. And I actually think it adds a lot to the movie. It lets the characters, like, breathe in a movie that, like, necessitates that.
So check that out. I didn't even know that existed on there.
So, yeah, so if you haven't seen it, run out, watch it, because
hurry.
In 10 days, it just disappears. And I don't think there's another way to watch it legally, which is really frustrating.
Well, we'll find an illegal
route.
That's
never stopped you before.
Oh, no. I mean, look, I'll find it. I'm comfortable saying that on air. But, like, it's ridiculous that I have to. You know, it's a very popular movie made by one of our best directors, and it's just going to, like, disappear from view.
Love that movie. Jennifer Jason Leigh was great in that movie.
So amazing.
Yeah. Kurt Russell.
I actually rewatched it
really
in anticipation.
Did you ever see it, Dave?
Kurt Russell's in it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, he's like the lead, Dave.
Yeah, he's like the main guy, him, Samuel L. Jackson. It's a very good movie.
I know that we've had some misfires recommending movies to Dave recently.
Oh, that's right.
But this one I feel comfortable saying, go to Netflix, watch the extended edition. It's such a good movie.
You know what was on IFC yesterday?
Gee, what?
Super Troopers.
Classic.
A great movie.
Didn't get any funnier. I saw the meow part. Guy called the other guy a turkey. Yeah. Like that. Everything else
turkey.
Stupid.
Dumb. What about you, Dave? What's bugging you? Were you dazzled by the eclipse today? Was that? I really enjoyed the coverage of it.
Did you?
No.
I didn't watch it.
Oh, my God.
Well, I remember
the
last time.
It was so over the top.
Yeah. I remember the last. Well, everybody's trying to make it into Doomsday. Am I right?
No, they were like, I can't remember.
Cool,
I was just flipping around between the cable news channels to see who was saying what about it. And there was one guy who was almost in tears. This is such an amazing event. Now we're all Uberists here. And we're all very excited. And this is, it's hard to put into words what this event really means. I'm like, this guy's double rainbows times 10, man. I'm just like, his voice was cracking and he was, maybe it's different when you're there. I think they were in, I don't know, Vermont on a mountain somewhere. I don't know where the hell they were, but it was just, I was like, okay, let's dial it back a notch. Can we? It's dark. It's light. It's going to be dark again. It'll be light again.
Yeah.
I get it. It doesn't happen all the time. I understand. Maybe you have to be there, but on TV, it just felt so over the top.
Yeah. Last time I remember, I was out in Winthrop, and I think for the eclipse, they'll have you cut like a piece of paper in a circle.
Oh, to be able to look at it or whatever?
So you look at it, and it reflects it on the
ground,
on the shadow. Yeah,
I would have paid $1 million to watch Dave do the arts and crafts project for an eclipse viewer.
Are you thinking scissors and paper?
Right away that I would really have a hard time cutting a circle?
Be completely honest. How many Band-Aids?
None.
How many times? Ow, got my finger again.
Good question, but none, because you just fold the paper and you just cut a semicircle and it makes it much easier. But yeah, I didn't really pay attention to that. So not really.
Bob, vibe killer. Yeah, sorry I ruined the eclipse vibe for you, but had you seen the guy that was there, it was like a scene out of a movie. I'm like, I don't understand what's happening here with this person, but he's losing his stuff right
now.
he's taking it to a different level.
Well, I guess one of the things that bothered me, I thought there was lots of hectoring towards the women's, Final Four and basketball game, that, like, you know, just over pumping it up and how, you know, they're just as good as men. Yeah, I know that already. I don't need you to tell me that. And I felt like there was like this campaign to watch something that I was going to watch anyway. And plus, I love it. I love watching the women and how they run offenses. And my biggest complaint yesterday, by the way, Iowa did not finish on their screens. I mean, South Carolina, and I know that Dawn Staley is such a good coach that she is probably, you know, teaching them how to fight through and everything, mm-hmm. but they just couldn't get Caitlin free a couple of times. And, you know, the pick setting was bad, but everything else was just awesome. And I love the passes. I love the assists.
They're very fundamentally sound.
There's a freshman girl from South Carolina.
She's training threes.
Well, the other thing was she was on a fast break, does the behind the back, goes underneath and makes the lay in. I don't, maybe she didn't make it, but I was like, she went like Pete Maravich,
yeah,
around her back, and then, you know, across the other side, flips it up. I don't think it went in, but I was like, man, this was good basketball. I loved it.
That was a very good game. It looked like initially it was going to be bad because Iowa got out to that big lead. I'm like, wow, are they going to blow them out? I mean, obviously it's the first quarter, but they jumped out to the big lead. Then South Carolina has a big lead, and then it becomes a 5-6 point game there down the stretch. It became very compelling, but yeah, it was interesting how they both took turns establishing this big lead where you thought, all right, is this just going to turn into a dud? Because I thought the two men's in the Final Four, those games weren't compelling.
No.
They both got out of hand where you're just like, all right, I'm hoping tonight's a nip and tuck battle. I picked UConn in my bracket, so I'm pulling for them. Sorry, Lefko. Hopefully he doesn't take that too personally, but
I hope you're good. I hope you're right. I hope at least it's a good game because that was a good game. I mean, at the end, at the very end, it got out of hand. I mean, it was like a 12-point lead, I think, with 3 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see what tonight's game is, and more importantly, hopefully, yeah, there's still a camera, Dave. More importantly, hopefully the Mariners will find their way into the win column with their ace on the hill. All right, if you missed any of today's show, you know where to go, seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab. Scroll down to our picture and click on that. You'll find everything you missed waiting there for you each and every day. You got the Mariners pregame coming your way next. We're back tomorrow right here. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710.